Hare Krishna. Yesterday we had a nice morning. Walked out to Pushpavan, and there we're remembering both the pastimes that took place there, as well as the appearance of Janavi Devi, Sita Devi, which was yesterday. I spoke some about Sita Devi, actually not much about Janavi Devi. But what was interesting and came to mind was the similarity, in one sense, between the story of Troy, the Trojan War, which legend is also sometimes called Helen of Troy. She's not of Troy, she was actually of Greece. And that of Sita, and how she was kidnapped by Ravan, and ultimately Lord Ramachandra killed Ravan and so many other Rakshasas also died in the process, as well as monkeys. And there's some similarity, but in going deeper, one recognizes that actually similarities really stop on the superficial level, which is that a war over or two wars, both fought over one woman. In the Trojan War, that was the case. The Trojans came, Paris, and kidnapped, took even with her consent, with consent Helen to Troy, and they would give. When the Greeks came to claim her, then they wouldn't give her back. And of course, they also took it as a insult, as a pride, I could say, a national affront. Although I don't know how much of a nation Greece was at that time. More, it was an affiliation of little kingdoms. It's a mundane story. Maybe part of the Iliad, but it's a mundane story, it's about a mundane person, materialistic people fighting over a materialistic cause. Whereas the story of Sita Devi being kidnapped is, of course, as the goddess of fortune, she's a transcendental personality. But aside from that, for Lord Ramachandra, the issue was not just about that someone had kidnapped his wife. Although, as Srila Prabhupada points out in the beginning of the Gita, that's cause enough for killing a person, killing the person who is the kidnapper. But it's the principle, it's the dharma. That's being actually broken. And it's the dharma that is worth fighting for, worth dying for so many hundreds and thousands and who knows how many people died to die just for one woman. Certainly we can reasonably bring up the question, is it really worth it? But is it really worth it to die for a cause? Yes, yes. Especially when that cause is the cause of dharma. When it's the cause of social well-being and it's based upon the laws of the Supreme. And in the beginning of the Gita, Arjuna gives a very thorough explanation of the degradation of society when women are not protected, when they're exploited. And of course, when they're being kidnapped and taken taken elsewhere. Adharma abhivavat Krishna pradushanti kulastriya. So this is the Dharma, because if society is not stable and if it degrades, then no one will be inclined to practice Krishna consciousness. No one will be inclined towards spiritual life. They'll be more inclined towards depraved activities more and more, as is the case in our present society. Therefore, yes, in all cases, it's worthwhile to fight for Dharma. Of course, we don't really have to fight so much for Dharma. Sometimes we fight for our rights to practice Krishna consciousness. Our fight for Dharma is not with the Ravana outside, but it's more with the Ravana inside. And our Trojan war, we don't have to pilot our ships to the other end of the Mediterranean. All we have to do is go within our own hearts. And that's where the real issue comes up, is are we willing to fight under all circumstances with our mind and our senses and our conditioning to maintain the principles of Dharma, basically, that Srila Prabhupada gave. That Srila Prabhupada gives to us in his commentaries on Bhagavatam, Chaitanya Charitamrita, Bhagavad Gita, and of course all of his other teachings, those principles which sometimes don't seem to give the same type of immediately satisfactory results that we think following our own minds or our own senses may, our own logic may dictate. But if we have faith and we know that in the long term we certainly do. And that prosperity, success will only be ours if we follow the path and principles that Srila Prabhupada had outlined for us. So that is why that is worth fighting for. Is it worth dying for? Well, we're all dying anyway, so at least it's better that we die fighting for a principle, following a principle, than compromising, not look back. Sometimes we go forward, and then we look back and think, well, maybe there's really high risks here, or there's real high costs involved, and better than I be practical. But no, devotees should be brave in this regard, sort of that Kshatriya spirit that's exhibited in both of these battles is required of devotees as well. Devotees have to be willing to fight with one's mind and senses. Yogis, Brahmins, yes, one has to be willing to accept that a battle is nigh, a battle is at hand. And the other wonderful personality is Sita Devi, Janava Devi, Sita Devi just spoke about. The other wonderful personality is Janava Devi. Both of these are really extraordinary transcendental personalities. And Janava Devi, who is the incarnation of Ananga Manjari, or actually incarnation of many personalities, prominently Ananga Manjari, who is Srimati Radharani's younger sister, referred to as Lord Nityananda Shakti. She was one of Lord Nityananda's two wives, and who became actually the Acharya during the time following the Goswami, still during the time of Jiva Goswami. And in some of the Vaishnava biographies, like Bhakti Ratnakara especially, there's much mention of how she would travel and preach, make devotees, initiate the devotees. She's an extraordinary personality. And an example of the limitless nature of Krishna consciousness, that if certainly one is transcendently situated, then one can take up any particular role, because it's not generally the role that women become the acharya of an institution, but it's certainly possible. Although, and it's interesting to see that in the narrations about Janavi Devi, she that doesn't necessarily mean that she forgets the fact that she also maintains her role and responsibilities as a woman. She doesn't mix intimately or freely with men. She serves them prasadam as opposed to eating with them when the Keturi festival is there. It's a very extraordinary and special person. And of course Srila Prabhupada very much encouraged his disciples, his female disciples, to distribute books, to preach, to do so many of these other types of activities on the basis that spreading Krishna consciousness doesn't know restrictions, yet at the same time it requires a certain balance. Just like later on, Srila Prabhupada also would speak about how he wanted to just train girls from Gurukul, learn how to cook and clean and be chaste, and that was their main thing, because Srila Prabhupada saw that their main role was that of being a chaste wife, because probably more than anything else that's required in present society is that family unit is crumbling, and with it the society is also crumbling, and therefore the inclination to practice spiritual life, everyone is becoming degraded. And therefore it's a mission for Krishna consciousness, not because we want to restrict anyone's role, but because of the importance of actually establishing stable family, and particularly the roles of men and women and children within the family as being essential for success in spreading Krishna consciousness. Similarly, in the way that Nirvishesha Shunyavadi, preaching against Mayavadi and impersonalism and Buddhism, or Srila Prabhupada's main preaching focus. Why? Because unless impersonalism is rooted out, then it will not be possible for people to really understand or enter into the deeper truths of pure devotional service. Similarly, unless people recognize that they need to live in a restrained lifestyle and accept specific roles according to their abilities and according to their gender, then it will really be hard for them to live in a way that's conducive for the natural development of pure devotional service in Krishna consciousness. They may theoretically understand the principles of Krishna consciousness, but to actually put it in real practice, it requires a stable foundation. And for sure, Prabhupada emphasized the importance of that stable foundation, a stable grihastha ashram. Anyway, but that's another topic. So these are just some thoughts about these two wonderful and extraordinary ladies within our Vaishnav tradition, and we offer our respectful obeisances at the lotus feet. Hare Krishna.